Axis Mundi.
Welcome to One Nation Indivisible. I'm Andrew L. Seidel, a constitutional attorney and the author of The Founding Myth and American Crusade. This is a podcast about religion, the law, and the battle for America's soul. We'll be separating church and state, defending freedom and equality, and fighting Christian nationalism. If you haven't already, sign up for our weekly bonus content and ad-free listening at accessmundi.us. LFG, folks. Happy Pride, everybody. Technically, an episode dropped in Pride, but this is my first episode recording in Pride, so happy Pride Month, everybody. I've got my newest Pride flag flying out front today. It is the Abide No Hatred flag from the Bitter Southerner. If you don't know Bitter Southerner, they have some of the coolest merch out there. This shirt, also a Bitter Southerner joint. This shirt is also from Bitter Southerner. Great stuff. Highly recommend. Check them out. Love them. And friends, I mean, listen, I'm scattered today. I don't have any idea what the title of this episode is going to be. I've written and torn up the outline for this episode about 7 times. On Wednesday, this was just going to be an episode about the Capitol Prayer Room and its history. You may have seen that Mike Johnson, our Christian nationalist Speaker of the House, has been showing off the Capitol Prayer Room like a teenage boy who found a porno mag in the woods behind his house. I was going to cover the history of that room and the stained glass window that's in there. It's a Washington kneeling in the snow at Valley Forge, something that didn't happen, and kind of how we got that myth. So I was going to cover that. And then maybe talk a little bit about Joni Ernst, who, as you may have seen, stepped in it, basically said, like, everybody's going to die. And that's why we're going to cut Medicaid from 10 million Americans, because we don't care if you're going to die, because we're all going to die. And then she did an apology that was not an apology and really got into some Christianity, which nobody covered. Some people covered the non-apology, but they forgot about the Christianity part of it. But then we got a new Muslim ban, and then we got this flurry of other executive orders, and then the Supreme Court decided a kind of important case about the social safety net and exempting religious groups from it. And then there was still more, right? Then you have the Trump and Elon breakup and all the ensuing drama, which is ongoing as we're recording this. I'm recording this on Saturday night. And then you have Representative Mary Miller, who is a piece of work being a bigot about government prayer. Okay, so much is going on, and even all of that was not going to be ever the centerpiece of this episode, because I actually, today, I need to devote this episode to asking you to do something, and to convincing you to doing something, and no, this is not going to be what podcasts love to do, and, you know, ask you to do something for the pod. You know, I'm not going to ask you to leave a review, or subscribe, or tell your friends, though, please do that. I actually need action from you. I'm going to ask 3 things of you today, but really you can do it all by visiting one website. This episode is about a call to action, because in Trump's big bastard of a bill, there is a program that could potentially, will potentially divert over 20 billion, that's billion with a B, 20 billion in taxpayer dollars, funds that would support public services towards private, meaning religious, so really meaning Christian schools. And I think we have a shot at stopping the Educational Choice for Children Act, ECCA. That's what this is called. I really think we have a chance at stopping this, and I'm asking you to take action. I want you to visit novouchers.org today. I want you to call your senators, and then I want you to do two things at novouchers.org today. I want you to participate, sign up to participate in a phone-to-text campaign, right? So you're going to be texting people and asking them to call their senators, especially in a few key states where we think the senators are actually willing to change their minds. And then I'm going to ask you to join a phone bank opposing this part of the big bill that's going to be happening throughout June, okay? This is three simple things that you can actually do to make a huge, huge, huge difference, right? And you can do all this by visiting novouchers.org. So calling your senators, phone to text, phone banking, okay? And even on those two, you can pick phone to text or phone banking. If you're a talker, do the phone bank. If you're a texter, do the phone to text. So there is a provision buried in that big bastard of a bill that's going to send $20 billion in taxpayer money to private schools and families who homeschool. It is wildly irresponsible, fiscally irresponsible. This will enable discrimination. It will undermine local control of education, bankrupt rural schools, and severely damage the other public schools that educate 90% of American children. So again, you need to sign up to take action at novouchers.org. And I'm going to walk you through how this will work, how this bill will work. But it is worth just pointing out again at the top. Vouchers are terrible. They don't work and people don't like them. And we cannot also, we simply cannot afford to fund an entire second education system, especially one that picks and chooses who to educate and whether or not they're going to be indoctrinated in a religion, which the answer is almost certainly yes, right? We want to ensure that every kid receives a quality education by fully funding public schools and ensuring that public dollars, public funds are in public schools. So we'll get into vouchers in a minute, because that's what these are. And we'll get into the reasons that vouchers, or I'll give you 5, 6, 7 reasons why vouchers are terrible and you should hate them. But I want to talk a little bit about this particular bill and how it's going to work. A lot of people know what a voucher is. If you don't, it is basically what it sounds like. You get basically, the state says, here's a thing, and it lets you go to a private school and it covers X dollars of the tuition at that private school, right? That's what a voucher is. And there's a whole bunch of problems with those. You're still stuck on transportation, all the other costs associated with private schools. Your private school is not in the neighborhood. You got to get there. Full cost of tuition's not. We'll get to some of that. This new proposal is a little bit different. It's not a typical voucher, right? It's not the typical thing where a parent gets a voucher and it works like cash. I'm going to break it down for you simply. Taxpayers owe the United States money. This is one of the two certainties in life. Death and taxes. I think Ben Franklin told us that, though. We'll have to check that. Fact check me. Let me know. Taxpayers owe the U.S. money. And instead of paying the United States, what this bill will do, what this new program will do, will allow those taxpayers divert those tax payments to a scholarship organization. And then that scholarship organization is going to fund tuition for private Christian schools, right? That's what we're talking about. Yes, there'll be some other non-Christian schools. There'll be some secular private schools in there, but we're really talking about funding private Christian schools. And then the U.S. is going to forgive that debt. So $1 sent to a Christian school is $1 off your taxes. $10,000 sent to one of these tuition organizations and then to a Christian school is $10,000 off your taxes. And this is using the coercive taxing power of the government to fund religious education. And there's a couple really important caveats to note here. So the first is that this is very different from how donations normally work. Normally, there are caps based on, you know, your income and how much you can claim and how you don't get the dollar-for-dollar match, but this is essentially unlimited, up to 10% of the person's income. So this is a huge It's just a black hole that is ripped into the system that we use to fund everything from roads to TSA to the FAA to public schools to science research, all of the things that we know, to national parks, all the things we know and love and value are funded by our tax dollars. And this is just saying, oh, no, 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 please don't pay us, the federal government, so we can spend it on those things that you want. You just go ahead and give it to this private organization, and we'll say you're good. This also means that people who are thinking about giving to a charity to help defer their tax bill, to lower their tax bill, they're not going to be giving it to the soup kitchen down the street or the animal shelter or that other charity, because those donations are capped and limited. But funding Christian education is a guaranteed way to pay less taxes now. And if you're at all familiar with Christian nationalism in the United States and the scams it runs, your brain should be churning into overdrive. Think about those prosperity gospel preachers. Think about all those scams that they have run over the years, that have those headlines that you have seen about mega churches and churches that are just scamming people left and right. Because that's what we're going to see happen here. And there's going to be two ways this is going to come out. So the first is that those Christian schools that exist in this country are going to create their own scholarship organizations. And then the parent whose kids already go to that school is going to donate. And you, listen, I'm doing big air quotes here. And I know some of you can't see them because you're just listening, but they're donating, let's say, the equivalent of tuition to that school, to that scholarship fund. Right, so let's just say that the tuition is $50,000. And let's say they've got three kids in that school. Okay, so they donate, again, air quotes, and then that donation goes to pay their kids' tuition, while their income drops by $150,000, according to the IRS. This is a scam for rich kids and rich people. Think about people like Betsy DeVos. Right, don't just think about the mega preachers running scams. Think about the billionaires that got their fingers in all kinds of pies. There are these situations where millionaires and billionaires might donate to a scholarship organization that they own, which would then fund a Christian school that they own or are in bed with or are invested in. So they're funding their own kids' religious education through a scholarship fund that they've owned at a school they're financially tied up with, which then that same school turns around and buys textbooks and school supplies and furniture and, you know, hires cleaning services and hires food services and transportation services from other companies that these people also run. This is a grift. It's a boondoggle. And if you think, Andrew, that's too complicated, it's crazy, I encourage you to go Google a little bit about Arizona's program that was exactly like this, and how much fraud and abuse. It's a massive failure, full of fraud and abuse, and it's ongoing. They keep sending more money into it because the people who are in the, they're benefiting, financially benefiting, because it's a grift.
Hey, it's Austin James. If you're like me, trying to live your best life while living with diabetes, you can relate to worrying if you're doing a good job managing your diabetes. I use the FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor to get real-time glucose readings and see the impact of every meal and activity to make better decisions. The FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor can help me live life with diabetes on my own terms, and it gives me more time for the things I love, like being a dad and a musician. Now this is progress. Learn more at FreeStyleLibre.us.
For prescription only, safety info found at FreeStyleLibre.us.
And it's worse than that still. I went on the New Evangelicals podcast with Tim Whitaker and April LaJoy the other day, and I talked about this with them and tried to explain it to them as well. And I mean, they were blown away by this, and it kept devolving into a, but wait, there's more, like the infomercials that you see. Because if you're still not convinced this is a terrible bill, there's millionaires and billionaires who can actually make money on this deal, right? Instead of donating cash, what they can do is donate stock. And this will allow them to avoid capital gains tax. It gets a little complicated, but it will effectively, they can donate stock, avoid capital gains, and effectively make money. It's crazy. It's crazy. So there's all these ways for the rich to get richer. And that's actually kind of fitting for vouchers, because that's what vouchers have always been about. Vouchers go to rich kids. There's this myth that is out there. It's not a myth. There's disinformation deliberately pushed by people who want vouchers, people who want to destroy public education, that vouchers support kids who are financially the worst off. But that is not true. And the recent example that I think is really powerful is that 95% of the participants in Arkansas's universal voucher program had never attended public school before receiving a voucher. Right? These were kids who were already in private schools paying private school tuition. But now we're paying for it. And this is across the board. I have a couple chapters in American Crusade on the attack on public education and neo-vouchers being a big part of that. And that's something that's common. You know, I've got a quote in American Crusade that I don't remember off the top of my head, and I'm not going to go look up right now, where one of the legislators in Georgia who passed that bill was like, yeah, that was the point. He's caught on tape saying, yeah, that was the point. We wanted to get rich kids to be able to go to their rich kid private schools more cheaply. We weren't trying to help the poor kids in the failing public schools. That's not why we passed vouchers. I'm obviously paraphrasing because, again, I didn't go look up the quote. That's one reason, I think a big reason, not to support vouchers. Another is that you're going to be funding discrimination. Vouchers do not give choice to parents, do not give choice to students. They give choice to private schools. The private schools funded by vouchers will be allowed to reject students with disabilities. They'll be allowed to reject students based on their academic ability, their religion, their sexual orientation, their gender identity, even their race and ethnicity. And if they're not, and if the state says, no, we don't allow that, they are going to turn around and find one of these Christian nationalist organizations and sue. And if you think I'm crazy, that's happening right now. In fact, there's a case out of Maine from the 2022 term that the Supreme Court decided in 2022 called Carson versus Macon that I talk a little bit about in the follow-up to American Crusade that is on the AndrewLSeidel.com website. And short version is you have private Christian schools basically challenging a program and saying, hey, we want kids to be able to use... This is a vast oversimplification, okay? Public money to go to our schools. And the Supreme Court says, yes, I'm not going to get it. Again, vast oversimplification. I'm not going to get into the nitty gritty of that particular scheme and the way it worked. But because the important point is that the state of Maine was like, fine, but you have to follow all the rules and the strings that we're going to attach to public money, just like all the other schools that get public money, including you can't discriminate. And so now those schools are bringing a second lawsuit with the same Christian nationalist organization saying, no, not only do we get access to the public treasury, but we also have a religious freedom right to discriminate against LGBTQ kids and families and employees. They want to have their cake and eat it too. And kids with disabilities are a particular target of these schools. They're not going to accept them. They're not going to take on what they see as a huge financial burden. They're not going to take on the students who, you know, may be quote unquote troubled. Vouchers go to rich kids. Vouchers fund discrimination. You will be funding discrimination. Vouchers also kill rural schools. And 20% of the students in our country attend rural schools. And when we divert funding away from those public schools in rural communities, it actually really weakens those communities. And it weakens those public schools. And there's a lot of places where those schools are the largest employer in that rural community. And adults and children depend on those public schools. And the reality is, like, vouchers are not going to help those kids. Because there's no school anywhere in that vicinity that's going to accept those vouchers. One more, and then I'll get to the big one. This is going to force states into voucher programs. Force voters and people who don't want vouchers to have to adopt them. To give you just one example, we talked about this, April and I talked about this on the on her show, right? She's from Kentucky. Voters in Kentucky overwhelmingly rejected a voucher proposal. Same with Nebraska. Just this is just in the 2024 election. This is just the other day. And according to the NoVouchers.org folks, including 47 counties where they also voted for President-elect Trump by a 70-plus point margin. 47 counties that voted for Trump, 70-plus points, voted down vouchers. Right? Like, this is... Nobody wants these. And the reason that nobody wants them, is in addition to everything I just said, is that vouchers do not work. Study after study show that vouchers do not improve educational outcomes for students. There are some credible studies that show they're actually worse for students. They don't work. They kill rural schools and community. They go to rich kids. They fund discrimination. And this bill would force these on to students and on to communities and on to schools and on to states that don't want them. As April said, what happened to states' rights? We'll do an episode on states' rights someday, because states' rights has always been a way to fuck people over. Minorities of either religion, race. It's never been about states' rights. It's been about discrimination nearly from the beginning. So please, 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 please go to NoVouchers.org and do some volunteering. And if you're not going to do that, at the very least, pick up the phone and call your goddamn senator and tell them to vote against the Educational Choice for Children Act. Strip the Educational Choice for Children Act out of the big bastard of a bill. Educational Choice for Children Act, vote no. Vote no on the Educational Choice for Children Act. And go to NoVouchers.org, join a phone bank, join the text campaign. Please do something else. I think we can win this one, folks. Let's talk about government prayer. Government prayer is just what it sounds like. It's when the government prays. Now, we citizens have freedom of religion in this country, but our government has no religion to exercise. So the free exercise of religion does not apply to the government. It is a secular government. It has no religion. In The Federalist number 69, Alexander Hamilton, A. Ham, tells us that it has, quote, no particle of spiritual jurisdiction. Government prayer is a constitutional contradiction. It is an oxymoron in a country that separates church and state. And still, we have it. And it's always a problem. It's always been a problem. Thomas Jefferson refused to issue presidential proclamations on days of prayer. And he explained why. There was a Reverend Samuel Miller who wrote to him and basically was like, dude, WTF, why aren't you doing this? And Jefferson responded, January 23rd, 1808. He writes a letter to the Reverend Samuel Miller, and Jefferson says, quote, I consider the government of the United States as interdicted by the Constitution from intermeddling with religious institutions, their doctrines, discipline, or exercises. This results not only from the provision that no law shall be made respecting the establishment or free exercise of religion, he's quoting the First Amendment there, but from that also which reserves to the states the power not delegated to the U.S. And then Jefferson goes on to say, quote, fasting and prayer are religious exercises. The enjoining them, an act of discipline. Every religious society has a right to determine for itself the times for these exercises and the objects proper for them according to their own particular tenets. And this right can never be safer than in their own hands where the Constitution has deposited it. It is not for the government, Jefferson is telling us, telling this reverend, to say when and if and how to pray. It is up to you to tell your congregants, your flock, if and when and how to pray. And up to them to decide if they're going to listen. James Madison, who's known as the father of our Constitution, the father of the Bill of Rights, He laid out more objections in a document that we call the Detached Memorandum. Detached because we don't really know what this was, where we know that Jefferson, for instance, was responding to this reverend. We don't really know why Madison was writing these down, what he was responding to, what he was writing this for. But it's an amazing document. I encourage everybody to go read it. It is one of the better defenses of the separation of church and state, and he gets more detailed, and it's certainly not as powerful as the Memorial and Remonstrance that we've talked about. But Madison looks at some really poignant questions. For instance, he asks, is the appointment of chaplains to the two houses of Congress consistent with the Constitution and with the pure principle of religious freedom? And then he says, quote, in strictest, the answer on both points must be in the negative. The establishment of the chaplainship to Congress is a palpable violation of equal rights as well as of constitutional principles, end quote. Palpable violation of equal rights. And then Madison goes on and he asks about government prayer. And he says, religious proclamations by the executive recommending thanksgivings and fasts are shoots from the same root. Right, so he's talking about presidential proclamations, right? We ask that you give thanks. We ask that you fast, right? Those are inappropriate. Those are palpable violation of equal rights as well as constitutional principles too. And yet, we still have prayers in Congress. We have a National Day of Prayer. And earlier this week, there was yet another incident because a Christian was not the one giving the prayer. On Friday, June 6th, a sick man, Gianni Surinder Singh, delivered the opening prayer in the House of Representatives. Now, again, I do not think there should be any prayers in the House of Representatives or in the Senate or anywhere in our government. I do not think our government has any particle of spiritual jurisdiction. It has no business hiring chaplains to say prayers, let alone bringing in other people to deliver those prayers. The House chaplain, the Senate chaplain, their sole duty under the rules of each of those respective bodies is to say the opening prayer each day that the House or Senate is in session. That's literally their only job. And they make upwards of $150,000 a year to do that. It is absurd. Where is DOGE on that? Even worse, 40% of the time, 40% of the time, they bring in guest chaplains. And Gianni Surinder Singh was the guest chaplain today. And he is a Sikh. Some people might be used to hearing that. Sikh. S-I-K-H. That is his religion. And it was unfathomable to Representative Mary Miller that anybody who was not a Christian was saying that prayer before Congress. So she took to social media, and she said, it's deeply troubling that a Muslim was allowed to lead a prayer in the House of Representatives this morning. This should never have been allowed to happen. America was founded as a Christian nation, and I believe our government should reflect that truth, not drift further from it. Mary, 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 so much to unpack there, so much bigotry, so much Christian nationalism, so much that you are just fucking wrong about. I mean, just the confidence and arrogance with which you're just wantonly spouting out bullshit is, it's embarrassing, Mary. And of course this is Christian nationalism, folks. It's right there in the post. Founded as a Christian nation. That is Christian, that is the defining characteristic of Christian nationalism, the defining belief. That's why we call it Christian nationalism, Christian nationism, Christian nationalism, Christian nation. It's right there. Also, I mean, this is inherently bigoted, too. She includes a photo in this social media post, and it shows a man wearing a distar, right? A turban, a Sikh turban, which is not a Muslim. I mean, this is basic religious pluralism. This is not hard unless you are such a bigot. Now, she did correct that particular aspect of her bigotry. She changed Muslim to Sikh and did a new post or edited her post. but still said America is a Christian nation. I believe our government should reflect that truth, not drift further from it. Still said this should not have been allowed to happen. And then she deletes all the posts altogether and hides from the media. So let's just talk for just a second about Representative Mary Miller, because you may, that name may like be ringing some bells for you. You may remember Miller because she was the rep who favorably quoted Hitler at a rally the day before the January 6th insurrection. I mean, you can't, again, you can't write this stuff where we are today. Miller actually took office on January 3rd, right? 3 days before the January 6th insurrection. And she spoke at the Moms for America rally on January 5th. And she spoke about, quote, the importance of faith and guarding our youth from destructive influences. The importance of faith. And then she favorably quoted Adolf Hitler. And it's not like she was on the internet and was like, I need a good quote about the youth, right? And just stumbled across a Hitler quote and accidentally included it. Oh, no. She knew what she was doing. She said, Hitler was right about one thing. He said, whoever has the youth has the future. That was what she said. She put the words in his mouth. The day after that, she objects to the electoral certifications from Arizona and Pennsylvania in the House of Representatives. Right? Part of, effectively, the insurrection, certainly in the House. And you'll be shocked to know that Miller is a Sunday school teacher. She teaches Vacation Bible School at Oakland Christian Church. In her candidate questionnaire, she said that she was unabashedly Christian. And she claimed in that same questionnaire, quote, our nation was founded as a Christian nation. Copy and pasted that right to that bigoted social media post, didn't we, Mary? Again, that's the defining belief of Christian nationalism. Our nation was founded as a Christian nation. Most of our leaders throughout history have in one way or another expressed belief in God. We need leaders who have humbled themselves before God and strive to live their Christian faith in their daily lives. End quote. And she wrote that in her questionnaire. Miller's husband, by the way, is a piece of work too. I don't know if he's still an Illinois state rep, but he was at the time. The reason I know all this about her is because she featured pretty prominently in the January 6th report in my testimony to Congress on the role that Christian nationalism played in the insurrection. And at the time I was doing that, her husband, Chris Miller, was an Illinois state rep. And he actually live-streamed video from the Trump rally on January 6th with the Washington Monument was right behind him while Katrina Pearson is speaking over the stage. While Katrina Pearson is speaking on stage, and he said this, quote, I think it's important to know that we're engaged in a great cultural war to see which worldview will survive, whether we will remain free people under free market capitalism or whether they will put us in the tyranny of socialism, communism, and the dangerous Democrat terrorists that are trying to destroy our country. Tell me you don't know anything without telling me you don't know anything. Also has questionable ties to the three percenters. He has denied entering the Capitol on January 6th. And again, this is because somebody gave a prayer that was not to her God. That's why we're talking about Mary Miller today. She can't, if we're, in her mind, we can only abuse government power to promote her God, not any other gods. And let's just talk for a minute, because she is not the first to engage in this kind of bullshit. And prayers by non-Christians are not that old. During the first Hindu prayer in the U.S. Senate was in 2007. That's not even 20 years ago. And you have self-identified, they call themselves Christians and Patriots. That's how they refer to themselves, quote, Christians and Patriots. They were in the gallery and they were screaming as this Hindu person was praying, quote, this is an abomination. As far as I know, nobody interrupted the thousands of Christian prayers that had come before that one Hindu prayer in the Senate. The American Family Association also objected. The founder of that American Family Association is a Methodist minister, Dan Wildman. He actually explained why they objected. Here's what he said, quote, we're not opposed to the ability of people to worship their own gods or God. Oh, thanks, Dan. Really, thanks for that, Dan. That's called religious freedom. It's in the Constitution. Doesn't matter if you oppose it. Sorry. Dan continues his quote, But when it comes to our civil government, it's always been the recognition of the God of the Bible. Every religion is not equal. That's my belief. That's logic. I mean, no, Dan, no, it's not. That may be your belief, but that's not logic. And it's not fact, and it's not reality. It's Christian supremacy. Every religion is not equal, he says. And if the civil government is going to promote a religion, it's going to be the God of the Bible that's going to be recognized. Look, and when the first Hindu prayer was said in the House of Representatives, Tony Perkins, Family Research Council, one of Speaker Mike Johnson's, you know, mentors, incredibly powerful institutionalist for the Christian nationalists. And this was a group that was originally affiliated with James Dobson's Focus on the Family, right? This is what Tony Perkins said. Our nation is drifting from its Judeo-Christian roots. He went on to say that tolerance and diversity, which he put in scare quotes, tolerance and diversity have replaced the Ten Commandments. Our country never followed the Ten Commandments. He adds, it's become necessary to celebrate non-Christian religions, even in the halls of Congress. And then he says, our founders expected that Christianity and no other religion would receive support from the government. No, they didn't, Tony. They didn't want that. That's why they separated church and state. And government support here is precisely the problem. Using government power for religious ends violates everyone's rights of conscience. Everybody's. And it's only Tony Perkins and Dan Wildman and Mary Miller only give a shit when it's not their religion being promoted like one time. 999 times out of 1,000 it's theirs, and the one time it doesn't happen, they freak out. They really get the separation of church and state when it's not their God. Thanks for listening to the free version of today's episode. To get the whole conversation, unfiltered and unfettered, sign up at accessmundi.us. Costs less than that latte you bought on the way to work, and I am just as delicious. Signing up also gets you premium content from Straight White American Jesus and other Access Mundi shows. Try it. You can always change your mind because life is too good to waste on bad ideas. This has been One Nation Indivisible. I'm Andrew Seidel. Until next time.
What is dedication?
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is
Dariana. We call him Day-Day for short.
Every day he's hungry for something, whether it's attention, affection, knowledge. And there's this huge responsibility in making sure that when he's no longer under my wing, that he's a good person. I want him to be able to sit back one day and go, we worked together, we did a good job.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.